Tonight, I'll be continuing with part two of a terrifying series of events that took place in a college dorm in Kentucky. I'm Nick Ryan, and this is Paranormal Mysteries. Thank you for joining me, and welcome. Before we start tonight's show, I'd like to recognize Desiree for their contribution on Patreon. Thank you so much for your support and generosity. And of course, the show wouldn't be possible without all of my amazing listeners around the world. Thanks to all of you for listening. And now, let's continue with part two of A Demon in Room 232. And remember that if you haven't listened to part one of this experience, you can find a link to it in the show notes. When we last left off, Jessie and her roommates were seeking help with the activity that they were experiencing. They were also beginning to realize that they had forgotten details regarding these experiences, and they assumed that it was because their brains were essentially protecting them from remembering these horrific events. Jessie goes on to say, "Things only got worse while we waited for help from the administration. This next event was not my story, but I will do my best to be as accurate as possible. One Saturday night, Diane and Ray were up talking after Jen and I went to sleep. Once Diane climbed up into bed, she started hearing rustling around the room. Diane asked Ray if she heard it too, and Ray agreed. Instantly, Diane got down from her bunk and joined Ray on her bottom bunk, which was lit with fairy lights. The rustling continued from the closet, and items started falling from the closet. Horrified, Diane started having a panic attack as the rustling continued. Ray tried to help Diane calm down, but she started having a panic attack of her own. The noises then moved from the closet to the other closet across the room to the bathroom. At this point, they realized that they needed help. They claimed that they both came over to my bed and started shaking me to wake me up. I was such a light sleeper at that time, I don't understand how I didn't wake up. After no avail with me, they went back to Ray's bed and eventually calmed down and went to sleep, with the fairy lights on. They didn't tell me the story until the next day. I wasn't really shocked by the story. I longed for the day when the vice president would call for a meeting with us. About 2 weeks after our first meeting, the vice president finally called for a meeting with Jen. I wondered why it was just for her and not all of us. However, I did feel a bit of relief, knowing that we might get help. After Jen got out of the meeting, I asked her what he said, but all she told me was that he asked her a few questions about her history with witchcraft and her history with medications. Nothing happened for a couple of days, but then Diane was called into the office. When she got out of the meeting, she was frustrated. We talked about it and she said that he focused more on the medication history rather than the witchcraft history. I was somewhat surprised at this. Next, Ray was called in, and the same process took place. Once again, I talked about the meeting, and she said the vice president was acting differently. She said he wasn't taking the situation seriously, as he was in the first meeting. I felt anger bubble up inside of me as I heard her tell me this. I knew that I was next. The next day, I was called into the office. He started interviewing me with general questions, and I kept an open mind. He asked a few questions about performing witchcraft and a few questions about my medication history. I answered them honestly, but was wanting something more. Was that all? Was that the administration's way of dealing with a demon-oppressed room? He then started to wrap up his questionnaire when I stopped him. I was desperate. I was pleading with him to believe us. "We aren't crazy," I said. "Having four people see and experience the same thing isn't just a delusional coincidence. It's all the truth, and we need help." I went on to tell him about other things that had happened since the first meeting that we had with them. I probably looked out of my mind, to be honest. With red eyes, dark circles, and a desperate stuttering voice, it most likely appeared that I had imagined everything. However, I knew that he trusted me. He was my boss, after all. After a few minutes of my input, I found it was getting me nowhere. He seemed like he wanted to believe and help me, but just didn't know how. I knew that something was up. Apparently, the vice president had talked our story over with the president of the college. The president must have thought that our story was bogus, and this is why the vice president could not do anything about it. I was appalled. The president of the college was the pastor of the church. I left that office enraged. I knew we were in this fight on our own. A few days after this, we all were called into the office for a final meeting. This time, the dorm supervisor sat in on the meeting with us. I wasn't happy with this move, but I dealt with it anyway. I sat in a seat and listened to the vice president tell us there was nothing they could do to help us, and that we would have to tough it out until the end of the year. As I heard these words, I couldn't even look him in the eye. I just stared at the floor and felt my heart break. I felt my roommate's pain. I couldn't help them, and they would have to suffer. When the meeting was over, we left in silence, and I went to my room, and I started questioning everything. I tried my best to pray, but I felt like there was a massive wall between him and I. I could feel invisible mockery of the demon. I couldn't do this anymore. I put on my headphones and blasted music so loudly I couldn't possibly hear the voices inside my head. I sat in the bathroom and just cried and cried until I couldn't physically do it anymore. Then, suddenly, my worst nightmare happened. The gory image that appeared to me earlier in the year returned. I instantly called Ray, sobbing, telling her what was happening. She was at work, but she wasted no time in taking an emergency leave and telling me to leave the room and give her 10 minutes to come and get me. I am forever grateful for her doing this. She arrived and she drove me far away and then parked. When I calmed down, we started talking and tried to remember the good memories that we had. After about an hour and a half, we came back to the college. And from this point on, my personality wasn't the same, and it showed. The name-calling in the night continued. The bruises became bigger and more frequent. The insomnia and nightmares grew abnormal. To say that we were exhausted would be an understatement. Ray and Diane both claimed to see the entity, but I only had glimpses of it in my dreams. Jen stayed busy and oblivious, although I could tell that she was exhausted. She never told me if she saw it, but I didn't ask. Nights became more scary as time went. Many times I would hear sounds of something massive crawling on the walls and ceiling. Diane said that some nights she could feel something staring at her from the ceiling onto her bed. My suspicions of witchcraft grew, and I had my theories. I kept them to myself, but I continued to search for answers. I got in contact with previous college students who lived in room 232, and I found out that we weren't the only ones who faced horrifying experiences. The vice president had claimed that he had never heard this kind of issue before in the college, and I believed him, and still do. However, after asking many people, I found out that this was not news to one particular person. The dorm supervisor, Miss Thompson. I wasn't shocked at this discovery. There were plenty of rumors out there about her. I wasn't a fan of her myself because she had a reputation of getting too deep into people's business, but I didn't want rumors to be the foundation for my theories. I continued my research and asked questions to find the culprit. Someone had to be inviting this entity in and letting it live in the dorms, and I knew it wasn't me or my roommates. Then it hit me. I remembered something. When I was on tour the previous summer, my group came back to the college for a day and were asked to stay in room 235 for the night, since our regular room was getting work done in it. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary until I got ready to go to sleep that night. I was working on my laptop that night, and when I was finished, I put it in a secure place on the right-hand side of my body. I then leaned back and closed my eyes. Instantly, my friends and I were startled when there was a loud crash in the room. We used our phone lights to see what had happened when we saw my laptop clear across the room and completely shattered. I was stunned and tried to make sense of it. I told my friends where I put my laptop, and I didn't know how it ended up all the way across the room like that. Now keep in mind that this happened months before I was ever in room 232. The oldest one in the room, Daisy, instantly spoke up and said that she wasn't dealing with any demons tonight, and she told it to leave. I laughed, thinking that she was joking, and went on to sleep. I had forgotten about that incident until then. The worst part was that room 232 and room 235 surround one thing: Miss Thompson's apartment. I was stunned by this discovery. My theory was not proven until one night. It was late on a school night when I was setting out my outfit for the next day, when Miss Thompson came into my room without warning. She asked me if I knew where Ray was. I figured she was still finishing up at work, so I told her just that. Apparently, Ray and her sister were missing and no one knew where they were. She left, and I was worried for Ray. I didn't have my phone, so I couldn't contact her, so I decided to stay up and wait for Ray. After a long while, my anxiety grew worse, so I decided to leave the room and ask Miss Thompson if there were any updates on her whereabouts. I left the room and boldly knocked on her apartment door, and then waited a bit. I knocked again, but realized that she wasn't there. I started to walk away when someone knocked on the door from the opposite side. I was stunned. It couldn't have been Miss Thompson. There was no logical reason why she would have done that. I was angry, worried, and satisfied all at the same time. My theory was true. The demon was coming from Miss Thompson's apartment, and she was not being completely honest with the administration about the situation. Eventually, Ray did come home, and it was all just a big misunderstanding. I told my discovery to my roommates, excluding Jen. I loved Jen, but I didn't want to scare her. None of us did. They weren't shocked. Both of them had their fair share of issues with Miss Thompson. I kept my distance from Miss Thompson from that moment on, but my simple choice would not be as easy to keep as I thought. Miss Thompson approached me one night after devotions and said the strangest thing to me. She said, "I've noticed something has been off with your spirit lately. Is everything okay?" I laughed out loud. I found it ironic that she would ask me this after she knew the administration told us they weren't going to help us with our issue. However, I assured her that I was fine. She pressed hard on the subject, but I didn't budge. However, I knew that I should at least try to solve the problem. When she left, she said that her office was always open. Maybe I was wrong about this whole thing. Maybe I should give her a chance. I decided to go to her office the next day. I didn't want to go off subject, and I wanted the meeting to be short and sweet. By the next day, I had a deep feeling that I should not go through with this meeting, but for once I ignored my gut, and I went anyway. She closed the door behind me, and I got right to the point. I asked her what she noticed was different about my spirit, and how I could fix it. I immediately knew this was a mistake by what she said. She said, "Oh, nothing in particular." I felt trapped. Then she started asking questions. Not generic questions, but personal questions. I wasn't letting this person get into my life that easily. I gave curt and general answers. Then she pressed further. She brought up something so incredibly personal that I could feel the anger bubble up inside me. Why would she bring that up? How did she even know I was deeply involved in that? This particular business was my Achilles heel, and I was appalled that she brought it up like she did. I answered almost everything with the simple phrase, "That's my personal business, and I don't feel comfortable answering that." This little interview went on for 45 minutes. The more I sat, the more attacked I felt. I then cut the meeting short by coming up with some excuse. She tried to break me for information and tried to take advantage of me when she knew I was not doing well. She knew, and I knew that she knew. I never in my life had been so angry about anything. Spring break was approaching fast when my roommates and I hurried to get last-minute projects done. One day after classes, Diane and I were in the room by ourselves. I relaxed on my bed while she took a short nap before work. I was scrolling through the internet when I heard Diane moan something. "Shut up," she said. Her voice sounded annoyed. "You're so loud." I found it somewhat funny, but I didn't pay it any mind. About 15 minutes later, Diane woke up and I asked her if she remembered talking. Surprisingly, she said that she did because she said I was being too loud. I was confused and told her that I hadn't made any noise during her nap. In fact, I hadn't moved from the bed at all while she was sleeping. Diane then went on to explain that she heard someone laughing and clapping the closet on the right side of the room. We were both creeped out from this. One other specific detail would be the smell. It would come and go randomly. Now, given the fact that there were four girls living in one room, may lead one to believe that the presence of bodies and our stuff would cause all kinds of smells. This is true to a point. However, our room was spotless. This is not an exaggeration. I would go as far as to say that our room was the cleanest room on campus. All of us worked hard to keep our room uncluttered and very clean. The smell was hard to describe. It smelled rotten, but I could not pinpoint a specific smell to associate it with for comparison. We would open the windows and even the door for hours, but it wouldn't help. It was annoying and distracting. Then, it would just dissipate. Before we continue with Jesse's experience, please remember that you can share your experience with me through email or voice message at paranormalmysteriespodcast.com or at paranormalmysteriespodcast@gmail.com. And if you're interested in showing your support, please consider following and sharing the podcast. And by giving me a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, you can help new listeners to find the show. You can also support me on Patreon, buy me a coffee, or PayPal by making a one-time donation, or become a member and listen to every episode ad-free. If you're looking for additional ways to get involved, please visit our website and join the forum. And be sure to follow me on social media for show updates and future content. And links to all of my contact and support information can be found in the show notes. Jesse goes on to say, around this time, the COVID-19 era began and quarantine was in full swing. I had left for spring break and was staying with friends in Missouri for 3 weeks. Whether school would continue was a big dilemma. I didn't care either way. I was enjoying the long, fresh nights of uninterrupted sleep. No demons, no nightmares. It was sweet bliss. When I finally got word that school would continue, I decided to press on and finish. But when I returned, I realized that it would just be Jen and I to the end of the semester. Ray and Diane would not be returning. I didn't blame them one bit. I was relieved for them. They would finally be able to heal from all of this. However, the night that I moved in was the night I was welcomed back with another nightmare. Diane called out for me in the night. I instantly got up and joined her on the top bunk to try and calm her fear and anxiety. When I looked in her eyes, they rolled back into her head and her jaw dropped open. Her skin faded to a grayish, rotting color when swarms of flies suddenly burst out of her eyes and her mouth. I screamed and hopped off the bed, and then called outside the door for someone to help me. I looked up to Diane's bed and took a step back into the darkness behind me, and I heard a voice whisper in my ear, "You're next." I then gasped into consciousness and took deep breaths to try and soothe my beating heart. I laid there for a moment when I felt something. I could feel a cold hand touching my right leg. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't move. I was paralyzed in fear. I remember screaming out to God to make it stop, and thankfully he showed me mercy as I was sent to sleep. Classes were almost all through conference calls during quarantine. I just wanted to go home. I pushed hard to keep my grades up. I lost my interest in music during this period, so I spent all my time studying and working. I started taking naps during the day to help me get some sleep, since I wasn't getting it at night as much. I felt like a walking corpse most of the time. I stayed away from Miss Thompson at all costs. She tried to talk to me, but I always cut every conversation short. I wanted nothing to do with her or whatever was living in her apartment. It was just a few weeks until finals. I just had to endure a few more weeks. Now it was Easter Sunday. I was getting ready to go and see my boyfriend at the time, when I heard something jump on the bunk bed next to me. Startled, I flinched, but I saw nothing. What I did see was the bunk bed slightly rocking back and forth. I screamed and ran into the bathroom and slammed the door. I would have ran out of the room, but I wasn't decent enough. I desperately called Ray on the phone and told her what had happened. She stayed on the phone with me until I calmed down and had enough courage to open the door. When I did, there was nothing there, and the bed stood still. I then quickly got some clothes on and left. Finals week was 5 days away. I was so exhausted. I went to bed that night feeling like I was losing my mind. Little did I know this would be my second to last night in this horrible situation. This night would be my final straw. I laid down to sleep that night when I got the most unusual sensation. The only way I can describe it would be the feeling one gets when a limb falls asleep and cannot move it without pain. This sensation covered everything from the tip of my toes to the top of my head. I was in agonizing pain. I tried to toss and turn to get into a comfortable position, but I just couldn't. I knew this wasn't my doing, and I moaned out loud for it to stop and leave me alone. My body was covered in sweat, and I could feel the heaviness getting stronger. I almost yelled the second time, "Stop! Leave me alone!" But all I remember after that was waking up the next morning. I usually never told Jen the things that happened to me, but this time I did, and her reply shocked me. She said, "I had the same thing happen to me the other night." That was it. I was leaving, and I didn't care how, but I was leaving. I contacted my mom about coming home. I convinced her I would be able to do all my finals from home, and she agreed. When it came time to leave, I asked Jen if she wanted to move in with someone else for the rest of school, but she said that she would be okay. I felt badly for leaving her alone, but I just couldn't handle it anymore. I came home, and everything stopped. I can't say I've never had another paranormal experience ever again, but that's another story. However, I can say that I never had any issues in the safety of my home. I passed all my finals and didn't fail any classes for that semester. It was amazing considering my mental and physical state. Over the summer, my insomnia was slowly cured, and I never had another encounter with the demon of room 232. Over the next few months, I healed quite well. I won't go into too many details of what I did at home, but I felt free. I took a semester off of school before returning. Why would I return? Well, my parents really wanted me to finish school, and frankly, I had pushed my bad memories so far away, I thought that I had the strength to finish. How bad could it be? Besides, I thought that I was 100% better. Unfortunately for me, this was the worst choice I ever could have made. When I arrived on campus, I wanted to keep a very low profile. I didn't want the trauma or drama to return to my memory. However, it wasn't that easy. Not 2 weeks into the semester, and I had fallen apart mentally. All of my memories of pain returned, and I realized what a horrible decision it was to come back. I'm not going to go into details, but it got to the point where I almost died, and I had cut off my friends, including my best friend. I never wanted that to happen. I just wanted to be a good kid and finish school. To end my story, I'm still recovering from all this. I was in therapy for about 6 months for PTSD, but I am almost 100% better now. Stay safe and never forget to take care of yourself before you help or please others. Thanks for reading. Jesse. After reaching out to Jesse and asking if she had told other staff at the college about the demonic activity or about Miss Thompson, as well as inquiring about the health and well-being of her other roommates, Jesse had this to say. Thank you for taking my and my roommate's experience seriously. To answer your first question, I never did tell any other staff members at the college about my suspicions about Miss Thompson during the time when it was happening. At the time, and under the circumstances, it would have been the worst thing I could have done. I mean, we did reach out to the administration for help, but received none, so making accusations like that at a respected member of staff would not have been the wisest thing to do. Realistically, I didn't want any more draining situations or drama during that time. Earlier this year, however, I did end up sending a letter to another trusted and respected person on staff explaining my story and asking if they would maybe be able to look deeper into it and see what was going on and whether or not it was Miss Thompson or someone or something else. But sadly, I never heard anything back from them. Also, my story was actually featured on another podcast about 3 months ago. And when it came out, my ex-roommates and I made an effort to share as much as possible. Our efforts were successful, and we received much positive feedback regarding our story. Students and ex-students reached out and started exposing their similar stories and their suspicions. It was the first time any of us were taken seriously, and it helped us all heal a lot. I am very close to Ray and Diane still, I am still friends with Jen, but we don't talk as much as I do with the other two. As far as healing goes, it took a very long time, but we are all doing well. In fact, I have actually started a part 2 of our story this week. It answers so many questions that were left unanswered in the first part, and it exposes the dynamics of the college that we went to, which I now consider to be a cult. Part 2 will also tell the horrible stories that we forgot and then remembered after healing, which in honesty are 10 times scarier than the previous stories. Lastly, it tells what has happened to us since. I am very excited to share it and get it out there for others to read. Thank you for taking the time to share our story. When I finish the second part, I would love to share it with you. I am trying to finish it before the new year. Sincerely, Jesse. As we come to the end of tonight's episode, I'd like to once again thank Jesse for sharing her and her roommate's experiences. And I'm so glad to know that Jesse is on her way to fully recovering from this experience, which no one should ever have to endure. Also remember that if you have a story to share with me, you can find links to all of my contact information in the show notes. Until next time, thank you so much for listening. And please remember, don't wait for the unknown to come to you. Get out there and find it.